Relation to the Screen of the Crime, a podcast where we talk about true crime and what would happen if your favorite TV or movie characters committed those crimes. I'm Maggie, and today my guest is...
Zach. R.A. Zach, as I've been referenced in an episode.
Yeah, I call you, well, no. I don't call you R.A. Zach, I just call you Zach, the student Zach.
Yeah. It's okay. Antonio called me R.A. Zach, so that's my new title.
I mean, it's a good title to go by until you're no longer an R.A.
That's true. Yeah, then it won't work well.
Yeah, it won't make any sense.
In
my phone, you're Zach Control Alt Deli, which doesn't make sense anymore.
I think that you're like, I actually have, you're like student manager Magdalene or something like that. Oh no, you're Maggie Alt Deli.
Okay. Zach has actually been on the podcast before in that the elevator game episode, I think, right?
No. It was on Super Bowl Sunday, and it was, like, Tiger Parents and, like, the kid murdered. Yeah.
Yes, it was the girl. Is it the girl who had her family killed?
Yes. But she tried to get a hit on her family, and her dad survived. And, yeah, and we connected it to Black Mirror. It was a great episode. Yes. If you haven't heard it because you're new to the podcast, go check it out.
Thank you.
I was funnier then, so don't expect too much.
No. All right, we'll get into the case. So this case is, I got all my information from Dateline NBC. It was an article written by Chris Hansen, you know, from How to Catch a Predator.
Yeah.
This isn't a How to Catch a Predator thing, though. And this is the case that has to deal with Scott Johnson and Sean Farmer. So... buckle up, because this is a big one. So on May 6, 2008, my brother's 11th birthday, Scott Johnson, who was a cook, and Sean Farmer, who was a truck driver, decided to go camping and fishing on the Appalachian Trail. And Scott and Sean were near the trail, miles away from civilization, and heading to a creek to get rainbow trout. Oh, I forgot to put my glasses on. That's the turning point.
Yes. It's going to be impeccable from here forward now she has her glasses on.
In the interview with Chris Hansen, they said that they caught 6 nice big trout, so that was cool of them.
Nice.
And Scott and Sean both said that they had an uneasy feeling of being watched that day. They did not know, but some other hikers had told local sheriff that they had seen something very odd on the nearby Appalachian Trail. They saw strange symbols and threatening signs painted on rocks and trees. Sheriff Morgan Milron said, quote, "There were skulls and crossbones painted on rocks, you know. Enter at your own risk." Some of those signs were near Wapatiti Shelter, which is very close to where Scott and Sean had pitched their camp. The Wapatiti Shelter is well known, but mostly avoided by those who know its secrets.
Oh?
Quote, "Something evil happened at this lonely campground years ago, a crime so gruesome that its memory seemed to linger in the damp forest air." We'll get back to that. Anyway, so Scott Johnson said that they had been fishing all morning and that they were coming back up the mountain, and then there was a dog on the road, so he stopped and he got out of his truck, and he saw someone walking up the creek bank, and he said that they talked for a little while about fishing and stuff. Scott Johnson said, quote, "And he told me, he said, oh, you know, there's no fish in the creek." So Scott, being the good guy he is, opened up his cooler and pulled out his trout and offered it to the man. And in his interview with Chris Hansen, Chris asked if the man struck him as odd. And Scott said, no, he looked like a normal camper. But little did he know. Later that evening, they were setting up camp near a place called Dismal Creek, and the same fisherman stopped by. Sean said, he just, you know, walked up and I, you know, how you doing type thing. And he said he spoke to Scott and that they were fishing together. A lot of this is quotes because it's an interview, just so you know.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So who was being interviewed?
So Chris Hansen was interviewing Scott and Sean, And then he also interviews like a sheriff and like a retired policeman and stuff like that.
So Scott and Sean were not the people that died.
No one died.
Oh.
I spoiled it. It's a it's an I survive type situation.
Oh.
So okay. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I mean, everything I have is from their point of view, so it's pretty obvious they don't get killed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was confused immediately. I was like, wait, who dies?
Yeah, so Sean and Scott said that there was like a rule, an unspoken rule amongst the trail peoples, to offer aid and friendship to fellow hikers. So they were nice to him, and they cooked him dinner, and they all told stories around the campfire. It's cute and stuff. So here's what happened next. Scott said, these are all quotations, and we started sitting around the campfire talking about sports and fishing. And then Sean said, and then it was dark by that time. And then he walked over to get his dog right in front of Scott's tent and, you know, patted his leg. I could hear him say, come on, boy, we need to get back to camp. And Scott said, and the next thing I know, I mean, I just hear pow, pow, and I see his arm stuck out towards Sean. And then Sean said, it's really back and forth here. I just had this ringing in my head where he shot me right in the side of my face, you know? I hear that boom. I couldn't hear any other gunshot because inside my head was like, wow, just as loud as you can possibly imagine.
I love the narrative aspect for this episode.
I know. These men are very fun. I really like them. And my mouth swollen immediately, so I couldn't really speak after that. And then my vision on my right side went bad. Sean then went on to say that he saw bullets discharging towards Scott, and Scott jumped up and took off running and then ducked down, and he was shot in the back at that time. So he then ran up and hid behind a clump of trees.
Did not get the memo that hikers are supposed to be nice to each other, I don't think.
Of course, clearly not.
I mean, maybe shooting in the face is like his version of being nice, but like, I don't know.
Maybe. So he ran up and hid behind a clump of trees to protect himself, and then Scott realized that he had been shot in the neck. Quote, I could actually see the blood, like, just squirting, like a foot, every time my heart would beat. I mean, it was just pulsing out of me. Well, I felt around my neck, and I was like, oh, you know. And I felt the bullet hole, and I just stuck a finger in the bullet hole to plug the wound to keep the blood, you know, from squirting out. This man. And then Sean said the shooter turned back towards him, and the look in his eye was like a blank stare. He was like looking past him. Then Sean, who was 6'5" and 380 pounds, decided that he was just going to charge the shooter. So he did that, and he was shot point blank in the chest. Mm. And Sean said, at this point, nothing happened. There was no more bullets, no more fire. So I was just, you know, staring each other down briefly. And even though Sean was shot point blank in the chest, he was still able to turn around and run towards his Jeep. So he gets into the Jeep, and the gunman's running alongside the Jeep, and he lines up to shoot him. And Sean says, at this time, I just put my hand up, hoping just to, if he was going to shoot me through the hand, just, you know, block it a bit. So I start the car, and once the car started, he went past me, and I was from behind. So when I started the car, I ducked down in the passenger seat and just drove away. So he's in a Jeep, and he's got a face wound and a chest wound. And then Scott, on the other hand, is still in the woods, and he's hiding, and he's got a bullet wound to the back and a bullet wound to the neck. And his finger is stuck about a quarter inch down into his neck, which did, in fact, stop him from bleeding out. So that's good. And then Scott saw Sean escape with the Jeep, so he was like, I'm going to catch up to that Jeep. So he started running down the road out of the woods, and they actually met up. And he got into the Jeep. So now they are both in the Jeep. And Scott said, quote, I saw his headlights come in and he stopped and I jumped in, just screamed. I said, go, go. I said, we're both shot and we got to get out of here. Get out of here. I mean, he just punched it. they still had a long drive down a dark mountain road before they got to safety. They were 5 miles from a house and at least 40 miles from a hospital, and they are both critically wounded. Scott said, this is a very long quote, We went down that dirt road doing like 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, and I can see he's shot in the face. And I'm worried. Like, you know, he's not shot in the brain or something that, you know, it's dark. I mean, we're both shot. We're both bleeding. I mean, we're both in panic. There's a small bridge that we have to cross the creek. We cross that, and then the road veers left. Well, then we veer left. The next thing I know, the Jeep just runs up on the side of the embankment. And I mean, the rocks are flying and there's trees and I'm screaming, Sean, Sean. And we come down off the embankment and we stop and he's shot in the face. And I was sitting there thinking, well, you know, he can't see. He's blacking out. I said, let me steer. And I said, you just listen to me and I'll tell you when to work the pedals. But I mean, all of a sudden we're just take off again. And I mean, we're flying down the road and the road curves turns. And I mean, I'm steering from the passenger side. I'm holding my finger in the bullet hole right there to keep myself from bleeding to death. And so he's steering with the finger in his neck. The other guy can't see anything. He's just working pedals. And they're just driving 50 down this mountain in the dark. So that's fun.
I like how he frequently mentions. And he was shot in the face. Did you guys forget that guy? He had a bullet hole in his face.
He's like, he was shot in the face.
Had a finger in my neck, he was shot in the face. In case you forgot, reminding you guys.
It's funny. I like these men. They drive about 3 more miles, and then they take a really sharp turn, and they hit it too fast. And Scott's screaming, slow down. And they skid sideways around the curve. And he says, quote, the wheels probably come within a foot of going over like a 20 or 30-foot embankment. And we skid to a stop right there, totally sideways in the road. And I'm like, you know, go, go, go. And I whip it back around, and we take off. And we make it down to the bottom of the mountain. And we got down to where there's like 3 or 4 houses for some reason, you know, we passed the first and second house. And then I said, stop here, I said. These people are going to help us. And I jump out and I run up to the house and I bang on the door and I say, call 911, call 911, I said. And me and my friend have been shot and they come to the door and they see me and I'm soaked in blood. I mean, head to toe. And then Sean got out of the car too and he kind of staggered to the house because he was like out of it because he got shot in the face. Yeah.
That's crazy, dude. I almost forgot that he was shot in the face.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to remember that he was shot in the face. So a woman named Melissa Miller opened the door and she said that she thought it was one of her sons playing a joke on her until she like answered the door and he saw that this man was like bleeding out in front of her. So she called 911. But her house is about 40 miles from a hospital and it took 45 minutes for an ambulance to make it to her house. So both men were just sitting on her porch wrapped in blankets waiting for an ambulance to arrive while like bleeding out. Scott said, quote, the whole time we were sitting on the porch, my main concern was for Sean because I know he was shot in the face. I mean, I was scared, you know that, and he was going to die or something. And then Sean says that he thought he was going to be okay, but he was worried about Scott. And I think that's cute because they were worried about each other. Sean said, quote, I was beyond the point of thinking I was going to make it. I was more just pissed off more than anything. I was just going through pain. And by the time they were loaded into the helicopter, Scott was spitting up blood and he knew he was in like some sort of trouble because, you know, he had a neck wound and everything.
Yeah.
Scott was sedated in the helicopter because he was in critical condition and he said that he could see and hear, but not move. And Scott said, quote, I hear a woman say that I don't have a pulse. And then I'm sitting there thinking, well, maybe I'm dead right now. But then I remember the helicopter landing. And when the doors opened, I felt the cold air like whoosh across my body. I knew that I was still alive. And I was happy. I was like, well, man, you know, I made it, you know. And I told myself, I'm like, hang on, hang in there. So that's them. They made it. I'm happy for them. So meanwhile, a retired deputy named Tom Lawson heard about the shootings, and for him it was like deja vu to a double murder that he had investigated years earlier. And even though his last murder was in 1981, and this is 2008, Tom had a gut feeling that there was a connection between the crimes. In both shootings, the victims were attacked without warning and for no apparent reason, and both attacks took place at virtually the same location here on the Appalachian Trail. So let's go back to 1981, shall we? This is back to that thing that I was talking about. the ghosty one with the tragic past. In May of 1981, social workers Susan Ramsey and Robert Mountford had been hiking the Appalachian Trail, and they were reported missing after they didn't show up as scheduled in the nearby town of Parisburg, VA. It's unusual for people to go missing in this part of the trail because it's well marked, and most people on the trail are experienced hikers. Tom's the retired deputy, that the flooring, which was brand new, was very black, like someone had rubbed a substance on the floor. I kind of bent over to kind of look down between the boards, and I could see a red substance through the cracks. And once the boards came up, we saw that there was a large puddle of blood there. So he feared the worst, and the police started combing the woods, and they found a sleeping bag peeking through some leaves. So they uncovered it, and they found a torso, and it was the dead body of Susan Ramsey, but police were still looking for Robert. The next day, they sent out search dogs, and the dog came to a big stump, like a tree trunk stump thing, and he sits down, and that's when they find a Kevlar bag. Robert had been shot in the head, but police couldn't find a gun. Susan, however, was stabbed in the chest repeatedly and hit on the back of the head with a blunt instrument. Tom did find the weapons that were used to kill Susan. Tom said, quote, "We discovered a piece of angle iron, a wrought iron that was used in fireplaces. It's like a poker to stir the ashes." He says, I did see a large spiked nail that was used to put the shelter together. Based on the forensic evidence, Lawson, and that's Tom, and his colleague believed the killers attacked after the two hikers went to sleep. He first shot Robert in the head, and then that didn't penetrate the skull. So as Robert turns over and tries to get up after he's shot in the head, he got shot in the cheek, and the round goes in and up into his brain, and that's the one that killed him. And then the killer attacked Susan after that, chasing her down and killing her. So these murders triggered outrage and horror and also made national headlines. A large section of the Appalachian Trail was shut down for weeks, but there was no arrests. They found evidence in a tree stump near the crime scene. It was two paperback books that belonged to Susan. And in one of them, they found bloody fingerprints. They had evidence now with the fingerprints, but no suspects. A week after the murders, a man was reported missing, and the police discovered a note in his truck saying that he had been kidnapped. The missing man's name was Randall Lee Smith. Police found this suspicious because of the timing, but also because they found that the note was actually left by Randall himself. It was his handwriting. Tom said, quote, "So we started interviewing people who knew him, who grew up with him, and basically what we found out about Randall is that he was very shy. He basically had no friends to amount to anything, and he had a nickname. And his nickname was LR, which stood for Lion Randall." So a neighbor of Randall said,
Yes? Like lion or like lion?
Like lion with a Y.
Okay. Like a liar. So like not truthin'.
Yeah. A liar. A lion. He's lying.
I was like, lions are fierce. If he's so shy, why would they call him Lion Randall? And then I was like, oh, wait, Lion Randall.
Yeah.
I figured it out.
With the apostrophe.
Bottom of the crime. We got to the bottom of it.
We figured it out. A neighbor of Randall said, quote, "The tales he'd tell, and they were just kind of outrageous. And I think he expected people to believe him, but I don't think anyone believed any of it." He stuttered a lot in that sentence. That wasn't just me not being able to read. True to form, that note about being kidnapped was just another lie. No one had kidnapped Smith. He had just left town and had driven to South Carolina. Tom Lawson tracked him down and brought him back here to Parisburg and noticed something. He could walk out Smith's back door and be up the Appalachian Trail in minutes, which is a great location, I think. And it was just a short hike from the murder scene to his house. So Lawson had his suspect. Then the pieces started to fall into place. Tom found some hikers who saw Randall with Susan Ramsey the day of the murders. They compared his prints to the prints in the book and they matched. Randall was arrested and charged with the 1981 murders. Chris Hansen had asked Tom what he thought the motive was, and he said, quote, "I think his motive with Susan was sexual. I think his motive with Bob was self-preservation, because he knew Bob would wring his neck." And they didn't find any evidence of sexual assault on Susan, but that's because they couldn't because of the state that the body was in. So who knows? I don't think it was sexual with Scott and Sean, I'll be honest.
Yeah. You weren't getting that vibe from the shot in the face testimony?
No, not really.
Maybe that's just his way of flirting. Like, they just don't get it.
It's his southern hospitality is just shooting you in the face. They thought they had a great case against him, but the day the trial began, Tom got some bad news. The prosecution said that there were holes in the case, and they struck a plea agreement with the defense attorney, and the agreement was that Randall was to serve 15 years in prison. And Tom was really up in arms about this because he was like, a human's life is not worth 7.5 years. Like, he should be serving more time, you know? So in 1996, Randall was out of prison, which coincidentally is the year my brother was born. So I just find it weird that he got out of prison the year my brother was born and he started killing the day of my brother's birthday. I think there's a connection there. And if you're listening, Mason, I would like to know if you have anything to do with this.
I just want to talk.
I want to see if you know about this. So in 1996, he was out of prison. And his neighbor said that he came right back like nothing had happened, and he went up to the mountains every day. And his neighbor said that Randall became obsessive, quote, almost like he's a guardian of the trail or something. In fact, Randall apparently became so obsessed with the trail that sometime in March of 2008, he walked up into the wild and never came back. Ain't that the dream? The police became concerned, and missing persons flyers were posted around the area. Scott Johnson, who was critically wounded by him on the Appalachian Trail, said that he saw the poster of the missing person like thing when he was being rolled into surgery, which is crazy because that's the man who shot him. The state trooper brought the picture of Randall to Scott in the hospital again and asked if he shot him, and Scott said, yeah, like 100%, man.
Did he say exactly that? Yeah, 100%, man.
No, he was just like, yeah, that's who shot me. He's like, yes.
That makes more sense, yeah.
That one wasn't a direct quote. Tom.
I kind of wish it was. That would have been great. He was like, yeah, dude, it was him.
100%. Yeah, totally. Yes. Tom suspected Randall the second he heard about Scott and Sean, and the state trooper spotted Randall actually a few hours after the shooting, and he was driving Scott's pickup truck. So they found him. So Randall saw the trooper and then sped up, but accidentally wrecked the truck. And then he was trapped under the truck. Well, he was trapped in the truck because it flipped when the troopers arrived. So the troopers took him to the hospital, coincidentally the same hospital that Scott and Sean were both being treated at. And he was read his rights. And the trooper said to him, like, you have the right to remain silent if you want or whatever, but do you want to talk? And he was like, nah. But then later he was like, yeah, I'll talk. So the trooper said, this is from the trooper's statement. He said, and I said, did you shoot him? And he said, no, I didn't shoot nobody. And I said, Randall, you did shoot them guys. And I said, you know, you did. Well, he said, Randall, you did shoot them. I know you did. And he said, well, if I did, it wasn't my gun. It was theirs, is what he said.
What? That makes it better. If I shoot people with their gun, it's not a crime. Duh.
But he was lying because it was his gun. They confirmed it, and Tom Lawson points out that the gun was a .22 caliber revolver, which is the same type of gun he used 27 years before to kill the other guy. I can't remember his name. I literally just read it. So Tom says, we never found the weapon, and I believe partially the reason these two fellas were able to survive is I think he actually used probably similar ammunition to what he had back then, and that it was even more corroded and damaged, so they weren't as, like, bullety, you know?
Yeah, and I know that .22 is, like, super, super small, so it's, like, if he's trying to kill people, he's probably not doing the greatest job, but I don't want to critique. I don't want to give him any critiques. I want him to improve, so...
Yeah, use bigger bullets. In addition to the gun, police found a treasure trove of evidence that he had hidden in deep in the woods. Scott Johnson's sunglasses, more than 20 knives, meat cleavers, and other items. And then they found some bizarre drawings and notes, including this prayer. Hail to the guardians of Watchtower of the North. By power of Mother and Earth, hear me. Show me thy glory. I invoke thee, O Ancient One. I hope I didn't just invoke any evil spirits, but
police. Oh my gosh, there's something right behind you.
Everything's okay. Police say the notes and symbols are consistent with the religion called Wicca. He was a Wiccan. It's a pagan group. We know. They're witches. Cash. Scott said, quote, it was really creepy. I mean, he was out to destroy somebody or something. I mean, and luckily, I mean, he tried it with us, but we were just tougher than he was, and I survived.
What a flex. Yeah, you shot me in the face, but you did it wrong, stupid. If you were better at your job, I wouldn't be alive right now. Gosh.
He's like, I was just better than the guy who tried to kill me.
Too strong. What can I say?
I'm just too buff. Scott said the doctor told him that the bullet in his neck missed the carotid artery by 1 millimeter. And if it were to hit it, he would have died. He would have bled out. Scott said, quote, they weren't sure if I would ever talk or swallow again. They even came to me and mentioned putting a feeding tube in, and I refused. I said, either I'll swallow or I'll die. That's what I told him. Which I think is very funny. Like, imagine, like a t-shirt that just says, either I'll swallow or I'll die. Makes you think.
Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, him being, like, a three-year-old kid. Like, they try and, like, give him a tube, and he just shakes his head. He's like, I won't.
So, also, the bullet in his back was a quarter inch from hitting his spine. But it didn't, so it was fine. And Sean said, this is a quote, and then a pretty, pretty big scar here. And as far as this one, I mean, you know, that you can't even really tell there's a bullet wound right here, but it's actually inside my sinus cavity, I guess behind my nose in here. And then he even joked, well, Chris Hansen made a joke, like, one day you'll blow your nose and a bullet will come out. And he was like, yeah, that might happen. And Chris Hansen was like, that's a possibility. He's like, yeah, that's a possibility. So that's fine.
That's wild.
Yeah. Also, neither of them had medical insurance, so they're in debt because of the shooting, about 80 grand.
Gotta love the healthcare system.
So that sucks. But
They didn't ask for this, and this probably cost a lot of money for all this emergency. Like, they had a helicopter out there. Mm-hmm. It's like, for ambulance rides are not cheap. So I can't imagine what a 45-minute helicopter ride is, but.
Must be awful, honestly. When asked what saved him that night, Scott said, quote, that's a good question. I mean, just, you know, us, just the our friendship saved us, knowing how we were both gonna react, just being, you know, young, healthy guys and luck. And I think that's really nice that he's just like our bros, friendship, dudes, man.
Dude, we're just such good homies that we didn't die.
Exactly. I love them. They had this whole thing. The other guy, he was like, well, my mouth was all swollen up, so like I couldn't communicate, but like he knew what I was talking about, like he knew what I was doing. And I just loved that. I loved them. So Randall was charged with 2 counts of attempted murder for the assault of Scott and Sean, but he died in his cell like a couple days later. I think of natural causes. I'm not certain.
Okay, I was like, coincidentally, or like,
I mean, who knows. Sean said, quote, I'd say the most important part is, you know, just don't give up, ever, no matter what. And then Scott added, and live life to the fullest, and be thankful for all the things you have, because it could be taken from you in a split second. And then Sean continued, I'm just thankful that, you know, the beat goes on. We'll hear some more music, and do some more fishing, and live life. The end.
Wow.
I know.
That's quite a nice story. That's one of the least depressing cases I've heard on here.
Because he survived.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a big one. That's important. There is still death, though, because the earlier ones. Wow. Did you choose this specifically because I camp and hike and backpack all the time and you're trying to inspire fear into me? But
I did choose it because you do camp. So, yeah, but I'm not trying to, like...
You're trying to scare me.
No, I'm not.
No, I get it. I get it. It's fine. yeah, okay, well, first off, damn, I hope my homies would help me not die in this situation when I went out with them. This is a very specific scenario, So coming up with a movie that meets this or a show is like kind of difficult. But I guess an easy one to relate it to would be the movie Wild from 2014, just because it is a thru hike. So it's about this like girl, and she's played by Reese Witherspoon, and her life is kind of in turmoil, and like she's going through like a divorce, I think, and like I think her mother passed away, and she just decided to hike the PCT, which is one of the Triple Crown like long thru hikes in America. There's the Appalachian Trail, the Continental, the Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail, the PCT, and it's on the West Coast. And it's like very intensive, like it's difficult to do. And she had no experience with like super long distance hiking. And she just jumped on the trail to like hope to like discover herself and like kind of sift through all this stuff in her brain. But like very early into the movie, she realizes she is quite ill prepared for this journey. And she packed a ton of really, really heavy stuff, but not some of the stuff she needed. And so she really needed help. And so she tried to like follow the sign off trail to go into a town, which is like what you normally do on like a really long through hike. But she saw like a farmer, because the town is still really, really far away. She saw this like farmer and she was like, hey, like I really need some water, because it starts in the desert. She was like, mm-hmm. I'm out of water. They were out at the tap. Like, I mean, and he's like kind of giving off this like really gnarly, creepy vibe. And you're just like, because she's hiking alone, which is like already kind of spooky. And so he's like, yeah, whatever, let me finish my work and then I'll take you back in my pickup truck. And like, you're like, okay, this is a little bit weird and creepy because the movie paints it that way. And then, so he finishes his work and they get in the truck and it seems like very uncomfortable when they get in the car. Like he is giving off mad spooky people vibe. And then like, it seems like they obviously paint it to be this way because this is how it was in her mind and it's like her autobiography. Mm-hmm. It seems like he's like coming on to her and that it's like a very risky situation because like she doesn't know this person. She's alone. She has no idea where he's taking her. But then awful. It turns out he's actually like a nice dude and it works out. So a little bit different from this situation, but I guess I would connect it to that because like it's a through hike. But yeah, yes. two people getting shot in the face.
Well, one got shot in the neck. The other guy got shot in the face.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't believe I could forget that after it was repeated. Lord knows how many times.
Must have been traumatic. I think my parents have seen this movie that you were speaking about. I looked it up. I haven't seen it.
It was pretty good. I'm trying to think, man. There's got to be something else I can connect this to.
Have you seen the movie The Way?
The Way? I don't know. Let me Google
it real quick. It's Martin Sheen, and his son dies on the El Camino. And so he goes to pick up the body, but he decides to just finish like doing El Camino, which is the big walk in Spain. And he like meets some friends on the way. And they all, like, have their own personal struggles, but they all, like, hang out. That's also a long hike.
Yeah, long hike. Long hikes are the only connection we have to this. I've not seen that movie.
It's a good movie. It inspired my parents to do El Camino, which took them 5 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's a decent-sized hike. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, honestly, this is kind of a spooky situation, just personal anecdote-wise. Like, I've been backpacking the last couple weekends and actually stayed in a shelter for, like, my first time a couple weeks ago. And, like, some of them are, like, pretty isolated. And in this situation, you don't know who's coming across you on the trail. But like they said, like, it's generally, like, common practice. Like, all outdoorsy people are just, like, pretty chill and nice to each other. So, like, this is kind of a spooky situation because you never know the background or like the mental state of who you're coming across. And these shelters are like deliberately put like decently far from the trailhead, because if you're just at the trailhead, then you don't really need a shelter. You just like sleep in your car or something like that. So the fact that they were even able to get to a car so soon was like impressive and probably life-saving, because I've been at some shelters where I'm literally like 10 miles from the nearest way off the trail. And at night, man, it's really hard to navigate already. And if you've just been hiking like all day out there to go fishing and you're tired, like this situation probably is not a fun one, I would say.
Yeah, not at all. When I was in fifth grade, we went to New Zealand and we climbed a volcano on Christmas. And it wasn't that much of a walk. Like it was a long walk, but it was like a one day trip, but there were shelters around there. And I'm just thinking, like, if you were to get stuck there, it would be like downhill for like 5 miles before you reach anything that even resembles a car, you know?
Oh, so. I guess one thing we could like use to connect is like the witchcraft type garbage that was going on to like the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah. We could do that.
Except I don't, like, I've seen that movie, but I kind of like forgetting it. That's a good candidate for if I start my podcast back up. Yeah, because, like, that's kind of crazy. He just, like, he must have had something, like, go off in his brain that he felt like he was a protector of the trail and stuff. Like, the Appalachian Trail is super, super well-traveled. Like, there's hundreds of people that do it every year, like, the whole trail. And then there's, like, plenty of people who just do like little sections. Like I've hiked on parts of the Appalachian Trail, especially in Virginia where I live. So that's really spooky that like there's witch people out there.
I mean, I think it's kind of odd that that's there because my grandmother, I think, is Wiccan, or she claims to be. She's not practicing. But it's just like Wiccans aren't really that like Satan-y, as one might assume. But also, like, when he first murdered the people back in the 80s, there was no signs of witchcraft or anything. And now he, like, starts leaving, like, weird, like skull and crossbone things and, like, Wiccan stuff, which is very Blair Witchy, to be honest. But it's just weird that that's what he started doing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, maybe was he even a Wiccan or did he just, like, find that on the internet and was like, this is
good. Use it as like a scare tactic to like creep people out and stuff.
We'll never know because he's dead.
Well, that's a good the point.
Live for that.
Oh,
clearly, he didn't learn anything in prison. Just went back out.
No. He was shy, so he probably didn't make that many.
He didn't make
friends
any friends.
Couldn't learn any murder tips. Get stick didn't swap tips on. Hey, maybe you want to use not a 22 because it's like not that effective at killing people.
Yeah, I mean he did get a dog though, so that was fun. Wonder whatever happened to the dog.
Oh yeah, man, that's the story I'm invested in. We gotta do research on that one.
I want, like, you know how they have like those movies about dogs and stuff. I don't know what they're called. There's that one when they like talk. I want a movie, but it's specifically about that dog, and the rest of this is just happening in the background.
Bro, that would be pretty, like, from the dog's perspective. The dog's like, yo, what the hell is this guy doing? And dude, I mean, gunshots probably scared the hell out of the dog. So, well, wait, was there any evidence that this guy like did this more than that one other time? Because I feel like if homie was unhinged and just out in the woods protecting the trail, I feel like they just happened to catch him because he's so bad and stupid and like dumb at his job that they caught him the one time he did it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the first time was more of like a, because like he shot the one guy and then he chased the other girl down, and he killed them both separately. So I feel like that was maybe like a spur of the moment situation. He was like, oh, well, they're here and I kind of want to kill. And then, I mean, he went to prison for that and he was kind of crazy already. He left a weird note in his car saying that he'd been kidnapped. Like, what's up with that? And then, I mean, he came back and he killed at the same exact spot in the same month. So I don't think he killed anyone else. But I was reading a different article, but it wasn't really about the Muadas. But it was like, there are quite a few deaths on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, it's my mom. I told my mom I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. She's like, if you hike the Appalachian Trail, I want you to get a gun. I was like, Mom, I'm not carrying a gun on the Appalachian Trail. That's a lot of weight. And also there's state laws on carrying guns and you pass through many states. I would have to get a license in every single state. Like, that's just a lot. Like, no, thank you. But yeah, no, it's super dangerous. I mean, just because even like when you're near interstates and highways and going into towns and stuff, like there can be like some dangerous homeless people that are kind of like unhinged and can like attack you too. So that's happened before. But yeah, there have been other murders on the Appalachian Trail, I'm certain. So possible future episodes where you connect to two of the same exact movies that involve thru hikes.
Yes. Anything else? What's life been like?
Life has been, I mean, I haven't gotten murdered. I haven't ended up on your podcast in the first section yet, so that's pretty good. It's hard when everybody's staying inside. I was just thinking murdered? Before I got... Yeah, it's hard to get murdered if you don't go outside.
Like, yeah, it's true.
Then I gotta come to my room and, like, I mean, that's a very specific spot because I live in a building with, like, hundreds of people, so...
Yeah, they'd have to really specifically target you.
Yeah, and nobody wants to do that because I'm a nice, friendly bean. No, but I was just thinking, like, because I was listening to some episodes of your podcast before I, like, came on today, and I was like, man, like, the next story for this podcast or, like, a future podcast on true crime could be happening right now, and we would never even know it. Like, there's going to be some coronavirus serial killer that's going to come surface up, like, 20 years from now, and we're not even going to realize that, like, we were recording this episode during it. I just thought that was, like, a weird thought that was having earlier.
A coronavirus serial killer, would he give people COVID, or would he kill them and make it look like coronavirus did?
Yeah. I mean, or maybe he knows that, like, if somebody's alone, right, and people are checking in on people less, so, like, it may go unnoticed for a lot longer during coronavirus than, like, when they're actually out doing more things. But people, we can't have, no murderers allowed to listen to the show because we start giving ideas. And
honestly,
how to brainstorm a murder, that's...
It's just us.
Audio.
The whole 30 minutes is just us brainstorming different ways to kill people.
I feel like that's how, like, a true crime podcast has to, like, I feel like there's got to be some critique of, like, I mean, I feel like people that murder just aren't usually the smartest. Like, the clever murderers are, like, the unique cases that everybody is interested in and hears about. And then I feel like there's a large population that are just, they kill somebody once, they shoot them in the face, and then they say, it wasn't my gun, so it doesn't count. And then...
Yeah, no, yeah, I think there's a lot of really dumb murderers out there, but they get caught, I think.
Well, I just put myself in danger by coming on the show, because now all the murderers listening to the show have a reason to find out where I live. I was just saying, like, why would anybody want to come to where I live? Now all the dumb murderers are like, man, you called me a dumb murderer, now I'm going to get murdered.
Well, it's the risk you have to take while being a guest on the podcast.
Dang. This is probably riskier than, like, most activities. I want to know, like, all right, like, is it more likely to get murdered from the show or eaten by a shark?
Well, judging by the fact that we're not near an ocean, probably get murdered from the show.
Yeah, that's true. I also don't like the beach that much, so very, very unlikely.
Yeah,
Sharknado
so...
happens. I want to be able to connect one of your stories to Sharknado.
Next time you're on, I'll do a shark murderer.
And I'll specifically connect it to Sharknado. I'll reach as far as I have to connect it to that movie.
That's good. I started watching, well, I just finished watching, actually, the TV show Julie and the Phantoms. I don't know if you've heard.
No, what is that on?
It's a Netflix show. It's Kenny Ortega's recent work. He directed High School Musical.
Oh, I do like High School Musical.
Yeah, so this is about this girl who finds three ghosts from a rock band in the 90s that died eating bad hot dogs. And so they came back, and she's like, and like, she's the only one that can see them, but people can see them when they play their instruments. So they create a band under the guys that they're like holograms, like, and she's like just the singer, but they're holograms. But they're just three dudes being bros.
three dudes being bros who died eating bad hot dogs.
And, like, their fourth band member was a vegetarian and he didn't eat the hot dogs. But then he went on to steal all of the lead man's, Luke's, songs and become very rich and very bad of a person. And he has, like, this bitchy daughter who also goes to the girls' school because it's a performing arts school.
That show sounds wild.
It's got that dude that plays, that voices Finn from Adventure Time and also Lance from Voltron and is married.
And is married? Oh, is that the show? Is Married is the show or movie?
No, he's just married. He's a married guy.
Oh, okay.
He's like 22 or something. But oh, that's terrifying. He's in it. He's famous. People know him. The drummer is out and he's gay, so I think that's fun. And Bobo Stewart from Twilight's in it. Boo Boo?
I haven't seen Twilight in years.
He's a werewolf.
I need to rewatch.
He's got long hair. He's like a skateboarder who's also kind of gay. Anyway, like, it's a children's show, but like, it really gave me some serotonin, you know? Some dope.
Yeah, I mean, in the times of Corona, however you get it, man. However you get it.
We have to get together and watch scary movies because my roommates don't like scary movies and I love them.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, I've just seen so many. Now it's like almost hard for them to impress me because like, it's easy to make a very, very tacky and predictable one, which like doesn't inherently bother me. Like, there could be really good tacky and predictable horror movies, but they have to like lean into that. They have to know what they are. It's the ones that don't, they think they're nuanced and psychological thrillers and they're really not. So
yeah, I've seen a lot of those wannabe psychological thriller ones and you're just like, at the end you're like, what was that? Like, who, what were they trying to prove? I just saw the second installment of the Babysitter movie, The Killer Queen, by Mick G, and it wasn't very good, which is sad. It really threw itself into being funny and weird and very, very meta, but it wasn't very funny at times, which kind of fell flat. Like, the first one was good. I enjoyed the first one, but the second one wasn't the greatest. It did have Jenny Ortega. Is that her name? Yeah. From You in it. She's a good actress. Okay. I like her. Like, the child from You, the second season. It's not important.
Yeah. Oh, I've been playing some horror games. I was just playing one with my friend last night. We were playing Soma, which is, like, a psychological suspense horror game. And I fell asleep while he was playing, so I had to catch up on a YouTube playthrough last night. So that's what I'm up to.
I always liked watching playthroughs. I don't know what the game's called. It's the one when you're like an investigative journalist and you go to a mental hospital.
Oh, Outlast. Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That game smacks. Yeah. That was good. There are some good horror games out there. Like, definitely. And they're nice because, like, they can be more nuanced than a movie can get because they are longer. Like, it's just like if somebody made like a 5 to 10 hour horror movie, how much they could accomplish. But like, it's weird because I watch horror movies and horror movies don't scare me. Games do something else to me though, because like, you're actually in control and like immersed in it. Bro, I cannot play them alone. I have to play them with homies or let homies play them and me watch. Like, mostly because I don't necessarily get scared as much as I get, like, surprised. Like, and that's another thing I don't like with some horror movies, when they just rely on, like, startling you more than scaring you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the slow burn ones that build intensity, and, like, you may never see anything, but they build all the suspense, like, with the storytelling, rather than just, like, jump scares, which I think is probably a prevalent opinion in people who like horror movies, like, jump scares are not the most satisfying. You never leave, like, a movie that relies on jump scares, like, wow. Those jump scares really hit.
Those jump scares really got me going. No, yeah, I think that's a opinion that a lot of horror fans have. What was I going to say? I really like the video game Until Dawn. I don't play video games because I don't have any consoles besides my shitty computer. But I really like watching playthroughs of that because you can make different decisions, but it's also kind of like watching a movie because they have all these actors in it.
Yeah, that one's meant to be like that. I got that for my sister for Christmas a few years ago and like played through it with her like a few times. That one's like very much like less focused on intensive gameplay and more focused on storytelling, which I really, really liked. That's a really good one. There's the ones that I like are ones that lean into the fact that you're playing a video game, and so they don't have to follow reality necessarily. I like ones that like deal with like the unhinged mind. So there's, my favorite game is probably Layers of Fear, and it's about this painter who like has been living alone for years, and he's working on his magnum opus, and he like is going insane in this huge house that he owns. And so they lean into that fact where like you'll go down a hallway and you'll open the door and it'll be like the same hallway, or like you'll try the door at the end of the hallway and it'll be locked, and you'll turn around and instead of being in a hallway, you're in a room, and it all changed like behind you. So like that one is super good. And apparently they came out with a second one that's about like a crazed actor, but I like the first one enough, I want to play it. They also have a Blair Witch game that came out that I didn't even hear about that looks really good. That whole team that has made just really good games. They have one called Observer that's like a sci-fi dystopian psychological crime thriller horror. It's a lot of genres meshed together.
Yeah. Does sound cool. I might goof around and watch some YouTube playthroughs.
Yeah, I can definitely send you some recommendations, but...
All I watch is, I'm going to be honest with you, is PewDiePie and Markiplier. and Dylan is in trouble or something like that. He did a playthrough of Until Dawn. I watched them a lot in like middle school. Is any excuse.
No. I'm not going to yuck anyone else's yum, you know? Watch what you want. I used to watch all those channels. Now I don't have the time to follow them, but when I was catching up on Soma, because I probably fell asleep for like an hour when my homie was playing and I want to be caught up when we go to finish it. There was like this channel that I came across and it was called like the Survival Horror Network or something like that. But all they do is they do like very like fleshed out gameplay where they don't make mistakes and they don't have any commentary or like video cam. So it basically watches like a movie. More than a game, because like they already know where everything is and like what to do and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty interesting, because I've always like liked the medium of games but liked kind of experiencing them as a movie. But I have not looked into the channel to see like what other stuff they have. I just kind of found that one video, so who knows.
I have to watch Children of Men tonight for my film class.
Watch that too. I've heard that's really good.
My computer shit the bed when I was in the middle of watching it earlier today. So it's like there's a scene in it which is a one shot that we were supposed to focus on for film class, because it's about,
I've heard about it,
in a car. I was able to get through that entire scene and then my computer was like, goodbye.
And shit, what is that on?
I get it off the internet.
Yes, I remember. I know that place. I will look for it there as well.
I don't pay for it, and I don't know the name of the site.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure I'll find it.
But it might stream somewhere. I didn't even check, to be honest.
It's not. It used to be on Netflix, but I think they took it off.
Oh.
Did you watch The Platform?
No, but I watched about 3 videos and 1 podcast on it.
It's pretty gnarly.
Looks like I've watched it.
Yeah, it's the same thing, basically.
Yeah. I've heard good things about it. Interesting things about it.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly, I'm not gonna lie. I watched it over Coronacation. I was very jealous, and I'm glad that you didn't bring wine to this episode, because I can't drink in my dorm, and it makes me sad, because... I also can't leave, and drinking would make it more fun in here to hang out with friends, but...
Yeah, I mean, it was 3:00, so, on a Sunday, so I'm not gonna bust out some wine, but,
I mean, that wouldn't stop me.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have stopped me. Yesterday, we went to a cidery, which is behind Staples, and, at, like, 4:00, so we had flights of cider. There was a taco pop-up there.
Oh.
That's why we went. It was the Blue Toad Cidery, I think. It was on my Instagram story, and it was shared on the Blue Toad's Instagram story. So you could say I'm famous. times. Or
wow, wow. Yeah. I'm just honored I can still talk to you at this point. Cidery's Insta story. Holy cow.
You get a free, like, you can have, you like pay for five flights, like five cups of beer for on a flight. But if you post on your Instagram or Snapchat or whatever and you tag them, you get a 6-1 free. So obviously I'm going to get that 6-1 free.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would too. If I could figure out how Instagram stories work, because I've never really spent the time to do that.
We are very different people.
I just go camping and watch camping YouTube instead of Let's Plays on horror games now.
I'm going camping in December. I've booked the campsite. I paid $60, so that's exciting.
Camping in December? That sounds...
In Florida.
Oh, okay. Oh, yay. Okay, you said that. I'm dumb. You said that in that last episode. Okay. Yeah. That's fun. I've been camping too much. I went out both of my last two weekends backpacking. And that means that I teleported from all my work on Friday to Monday, where I had more work, because I was just walking in the woods and the time went by so fast. So I kind of just stayed in and did nothing this weekend because I needed to like decompress. Because I also had to like front load a ton of work to go on those. Because I was leaving Friday and I have like four assignments due every Friday. So I had to do them all early in the week and balance my RA stuff. So I've just been like mad overwhelmed. But this weekend I slept in and I did as little things as I could.
That's good. That's lovely.
All right.
All right. Well,
this is your favorite podcast that you've ever listened to called Screen of the Crime. We just analyzed someone poorly murdering people in 2008 and properly murdering them in 1981.
I think so.
Yep.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you so much for being my guest this week. I will tag your Instagram in the description of the post that comes out on Wednesday.
They can watch me figure out in real time how to learn how to do Instagram stories. Any tips would be welcome. DM me.
Yeah, so go CyberSock. Zach, don't find where he lives and go and kill him.
Definitely don't do that.
Don't kill anyone. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.